If you listen to the show, you already know that we cannot exist without our sponsors. They are the ones who make things happen behind the scenes. So let's acknowledge Fuji Sports. We've been working with these guys for a while now, not only as far as this podcast is concerned, but also at the Roll Academy. We've had their gear. I personally use their gis. What a phenomenal product.
Yeah, I mean, jiu-jitsu, judo, MMA, tape, bags, anything you need for your jiu-jitsu journey, you can find at fujisports.com.
Let's talk Roll TV. There's so much content on there. It's ridiculous at this point. But I think what is even more intriguing, as time went on during the project, we've been recording most of the events that were taking place here at Roll Academy. At this point, I mean, we have guys like Chris Howder, Armin Fadi, Rafael Lovato Sr., and Pete the Greek. I mean, there are so many different events that we've kind of recorded it. Don't you think that's amazing? I mean, it's points of reflection and kind of going back for all the students to see what really happened and refresh their memory.
Yeah, I think it's great, you know, being able to go back and look at all these high-level practitioners, Octavio Cudo, like one of the names you didn't mention. And I mean, just these guys that have been doing this for so long come in, teach these amazing seminars and workshops, and it's all recorded and there for you to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you want to get an additional savings on all this, type in code ROLLRADIO at the coupon and get additional 30% off of your membership.
Nice. Go to rollacademy.tv. What's up, everyone, and welcome back. If you haven't already, please remember to hit the like, share, subscribe, download, listen, and whatever other button there is, and leave us a review wherever you do listen. That ensures that we can continue bringing you the great guests and amazing content that you have come to expect. Today's guest has been in the fitness industry for over 25 years. He is a personal trainer, owner of his own fitness company, and a BJJ instructor. Steve McKinney joins the Roll Radio to discuss longevity in BJJ, the importance of fundamental jiu-jitsu, letting go of the ego to prevent injury, the defensive mindset, and a ton more. Here's the Roll Radio with the owner of Fitness & More Incorporated, instructor at Head Nod HQ Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and Kyle Watson Black Belt, Steve McKinney.
Welcome to Roll Radio.
And we are live.
Here we go.
How are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great.
Great. Nice.
Yeah.
Good to hear it.
Yeah.
All right.
What's new?
What's new? I don't know. There's a lot new.
I got a funny story for you.
What's that funny story?
Well, I don't know if it's funny, but I mean, it's a story. So yesterday I brought lunch, right? Yesterday was a long day for me, so I brought lunch here and dinner and everything, whole stack with the whole food.
Yeah.
Sitting on the floor here. I ate half of it, you know, and then my thought is like, okay, I'm going to take it home. And I'll just have it for tomorrow, right? Less work, everything, you know, all said.
Sure.
And then guess what? I get home.
And you ate it?
No.
What?
I forgot my lunch. I left it here.
Oh, well. So. Yeah, you're right. It's not a funny story.
So
now you got it. I got today.
No.
Unless it's
no,
like, what
you
was
can't.
It?
No, it was what left was it? Outside the fridge. No.
So what was it? You want to hear something gross?
No.
Okay. Margaret would eat it.
We have not talked about your lovely wife in a long time.
She has an iron stomach. She will eat things that, like, expiration dates are long past due, and I know sometimes those are just a recommendation. But, man, she's like, fine, throw it out. And I'll be like, no, okay, all right, I can see you're upset. I'll leave it there. And then, yeah, she eats it, and she's fine. She is fine. So I don't, you know, maybe.
How would you react to that?
If I ate it,
yeah,
I'd be making frequent trips out of the room, probably. You know, I don't. I used to have an iron stomach, but the older I get, the more sensitive I become to certain things.
You are sensitive. Look at that,
emotionally and physically. Yes, yeah.
Before we begin officially this episode, just want to remind you guys that we're still doing, you know, we're still seeking your feedback on some of the previous episodes. And so it happens today is episode number 151. Actually, again, like beating at that horse, but it's hard to believe that we had 150 plus guests on this show and 150 different conversations. So it's quite mind-blowing. And so go to our website, theraw.com, and then tell us who you liked. There's a big button right on the front page. Click on it, and you can tell us which episode will make impact on you. There are some that are flowing already in, and then once in a while we'll be drawing and a winner, and then obviously we'll send you a t-shirt, we'll send you access to Roll TV and all the other stuff. So it's a small token appreciation for you listening and spreading the word of Jiu-Jitsu, some of the amazing stories that we've had an opportunity to share with you guys on the air.
Yeah, nice. I'm just looking at some of the entries, and there are a couple older episodes.
Yeah.
And they like them for different reasons. Actually, and part of it is the same reason. I think we have a older demographic, because they're both saying they enjoy the older grapplers, and they have a lot in common with those guys. They don't list their age here, but I think that's what people are enjoying, is hearing from the guys that have been around for a while. So that's pretty cool.
All right. All right. Well, I'm looking forward to reading those. That's going to be, it's going to be quite interesting.
I'll forward them to you if you don't have them already.
Oh, I do. I do.
Cool.
I do.
All right.
I do. Shall we begin?
Yes, we should.
All right. Steve McKinney in the house. Sir, how are you? Good morning. Good afternoon. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Fantastic.
We are doing great. Our apologies for boring you with the boring stuff that we talk about at the beginning.
Not boring at all. I love it. I'm just enjoying it. When I heard the older grappler thing, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's perfect. That's
awesome. We'll dip into that for sure today. That's part of my plan. I can't help myself, and we briefly talked about this before we start recording, but I can't help myself to enjoy the library behind you. What a fabulous collection. Tell us what gravitates you towards reading.
I heard this years ago, and it was just a little quote, and it said, readers are leaders. And I hung out with these guys when I was young who were real intellectuals, and I wouldn't consider myself one, but we would always go to libraries. We'd always go to bookstores, and we would just buy books and just talk about the books we read. And so I love it. It's a, for me, like the nonfiction stuff, I told you earlier, I'm a Jack Reacher fan. So sometimes you need those things to escape reality, just to give yourself a break. And it's just a great way to escape. And then, the other part of it is the educational stuff. I'm always, even at my age, just still trying to learn. I'm always trying to learn. And so I'm always reading something that will help me. And especially, like, for example, I'm 62, but I don't know how to be 62 because I've never been 62. So I read books on leadership. I read books on, one of my recents is a book by a guy named Peter Attia. It's called Outlive, and it's on anti-aging. So I'm like, I'm looking into that and just reading those things so I can kind of pick up some things to continue to learn and to figure out how to navigate this aging process, which is always interesting.
Yeah, isn't it fascinating that even though there's billions of people around this world, we all kind of have our own thing going on. And it's even difficult to copy or mimic somebody else. It's more of that learning process. It's more of the self-discovery of what this is supposed to be, isn't it?
Absolutely, 100% true. And for me, I've been in the fitness industry most of my adult life, and so I understand how it works. But the application of staying healthy as you age is really interesting. For example, I was reading Peter Attia, I don't ever fall into the argument from authority. This guy's a very educated guy. I really like him. And I'm reading his stuff on, he talks about medicine 2.0 versus medicine 3.0. And then he talks about diet, and then he talks about training. And I'm listening to some of his training stuff, and I agree with the other areas, but his training stuff, I'm like, oh, that's really interesting. And that level of training that he suggests for me would be way too much for my personal ability to recover from exercise. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely.
Because yeah, we all have like all of the same things that we do. For example, if we want to gain muscle, we have to stimulate that muscle first. We do that through resistance weight training in a proper fashion so that we don't get ourselves hurt. But we have to be able to recover from that. And generally, over the years for me, I've learned that, and I know this will sound different than most, but I've learned that 2 sessions per week for general fitness or strength is plenty for people if it's given in the right amount and the right intensity. And so for other people, they can do more. I can never do more, but I find the general group is going to be, you know, about 2 sessions per week for the clients that I train for myself personally. Now there are outliers, people who recover really quickly, but for me, this is what seems to work best.
Yeah. And before we get into, you know, your fitness background and everything that you do from in that area, I'm actually curious to pick your brain a little bit on the simple fact of, do you think that we are oversaturated with information today? Like, No, because it's, and this topic comes up quite frequently from a jiu-jitsu perspective on the, at the show when we have conversations, but like, you know, anything from the books, anything from, you know, accessibility of data and information all across. I mean, everything is freaking on our phones, right? And it's like, so at some point, when too much is too much, how do we filter through this thing in order for us to become, to gain some intelligence, right? To gain some thoughts, we need to limit the garbage, right? The chaos. We need to remove that. And so at which point too much? Like
you couldn't be more correct. You couldn't be more correct. This is, I deal with this every single day in my fitness business. And I deal with this in the jiu-jitsu world as well. And I'll give you a classic example of this. I'll go do public speaking engagements for fitness. And I will have, there are sometimes hundreds of people there. And I, at the end of my presentation, I allow people to ask me questions because one of my things for fitness, and I do this in jiu-jitsu as well, is to simplify the whole process.
Thank you.
And so I will stand in front of hundreds of people and I welcome any question that they have. And here's, and I can answer it. And here's why, because I run it through a filter. And I'll give you my filter. My system of fitness is this. You hold up 3 fingers, it makes a W. It's weight training, walking, and watching your diet. That's the simplest way to get fit. I can explain that in more detail. But the whole idea with that, I can run any question through that particular filter and answer it simply because I've narrowed down what works. And when you know what works, then you know what doesn't work. For example, if you ever, years ago, when they would have bankers, they would send them to learn how to identify counterfeit money. Well, the way that they did that was they let them handle real money. They never let them handle the counterfeit. Once you know the truth of what real money feels like, then you're going to be able to understand what counterfeit money feels like. For example, in jiu-jitsu, I'm a big fundamentals person. And I always say, I think it's better that we go deeper rather than wider. Mm-hmm. And my reasoning for that is, especially as you age, listen, I'm not Barambolo-ing anyone. It's not going to happen. I'm not going to put myself in those types of positions. But if I can get really, really good at my basic fundamental jiu-jitsu, and I can apply that those things that work at a white belt level and keep working on them and then let them apply at a black belt level, I can keep myself safe and I can still be able to stay in the game. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. 100%. Absolutely. I mean, it almost sounds like our daily conversations, you know? Yeah. So there is something unquestionable behind one, understanding, you know, how this should work. That's one from a concept perspective, and then really sticking to the simplest way, not the easiest, but the simplest. And I think a lot of people misunderstand those two and they bleed them over. Simple does not mean easy. Simple meaning there is, it's, it, 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 it's, the complexities are removed or at least understood to the point where it's smooth, right? And perhaps your interpretation is different. I'm curious.
No. That's exactly my interpretation. I totally agree with that. Mm-hmm. I teach during our jujitsu school time, I teach a fundamentals class. I just call it advanced fundamentals, but a guy in, buddy of mine, known him for years, he's on and off trainer. And I was just teaching the basic trap and roll escape. And he goes, well, this only works at white belt. And I'm like, no, it doesn't work at white belt. It works at every belt once you learn it. So we would just go back and forth. So I had him mount me and then, you know, trap and roll them off. And then I just showed him the finer details of that. And we just kept working them. I went into the gym a little later. And he told me, hey, trapped and rolled a brown belt. And I go, yeah, it's just, you know, if you ever, you go back to Huron Gracie, Andre Galvao in Metamorphosis.
I remember that match.
And he let Andre mount him and then immediately hit the trap. And I love that kind of stuff. Yeah. To me, that basic jujitsu applied, I get excited about that. Just a basic scissor sweep. How do you apply a scissor sweep? When does it work? Learning the timing, the fundamental application of it, that kind of stuff is, to me, super exciting to make that kind of stuff work.
But let me ask you, Steve. I mean, this is all beautiful. I mean, nice and dandy and rainbows and unicorns. I mean, like, peace, life is good. But we know the reality is very different. We know that we have brand new students coming in with perhaps some grappling or wrestling backgrounds, or maybe none, zero. They don't even know what jiu-jitsu is. And yet there is this guy standing in front of them with the black belt wrapped around his waist. And he's like, no, fundamentals are the key. No, they're not. I want to go invert. I want to do flying things. I want to break the speed of light, you know, all the crazy stuff, because that's appealing. That's entertaining. Right. And then again, we get on our, What cool kids called it? IG. We get on IG. We scroll, you know, and then we get on a tube and whatever the cool kids call it. But listen, and like, there is this conflict, I feel, that what truly works, the efficiency of jiu-jitsu, and then the entertainment part, are don't necessarily, at least today, they don't necessarily align. It's almost they fight each other in a sense, where it creates, I think, a lot of confusion, especially at the beginning of our journeys. How do you break that into, or how do you explain that to a student? What is important and what really isn't?
I think that's, you're, once again, you're 100% correct. You're correct in that. It's basically what it comes down to is the shiny new object.
Yes.
And it's just, it's dangled out there in front of us. So here's the way that I look at it. And here's the way, because listen, you want jiu-jitsu to be fun for people, and you want people to be able to, the younger guys, and you know, you want to be able to invert and do this. And I honestly, I can do a few of those things at my age. I just know they're not the wisest thing to do. So how I explain it to the guys that want to do that stuff, the modern jiu-jitsu world, which is fantastic. I think it's awesome and the things that you see. But I will also work with those guys, and what I'll talk to them about, a couple of blue belts I've been working with who are in the competition scene, I talk to them. I'm like, listen, your game is fantastic, except you have some huge holes, and your holes are in your fundamentals. And so, you know, you're able to do these things that are fantastic, but don't forget that, you know, weight distribution and being able to pressure pass without using a lot of energy, and those things are so very helpful, and they will save you so much energy in a competition type setting. I'm not saying you shouldn't do the things you do and do the things you enjoy, but don't forget to add these advanced, I call them advanced fundamentals, to your game. And what you will see, you'll see your game just continue to climb. It's just keeping people focused. And, you know, we live in this, like you said, the tube, the IG world and all those things. And you're watching people, you know, just flashing through. And what it's also done, and you can I see this in our classes. It's created this inability to stay focused for any length of time for people. You know, if you can't capture them and keep them excited within a, you know, minute, 30 second window, they're staring off into space. So you have to be able to figure those things out, keep them entertained in the middle of it, yet still apply the basics to their game and show them how they work. And so I like I said, you're correct with that. And the world is changed so much. You know, what's interesting for me is I got my black belt, I think it was 57 or 58 in that area, but I started jujitsu at 47. So I didn't get my black belt when I was young. I got my black belt when I was old. So having that experience is totally different because I'm a very, very, very slow learner. And I can't learn in those large chunks. As you get older, you find it's a little harder to learn things. And so I teach in very simple ways and try to keep people and, invested in what I'm doing while I'm teaching that. And once again, you start seeing those basic things work, and then you can add athleticism. You can add, the more modern game to that, and they blend very, very well together.
Yeah. And I think that's greatly appreciated for those who are able to understand the value behind those fundamentals. I like the fact, I like the phrase advanced fundamentals. I might steal that from you.
Yeah, I stole it. Stole it from someone else. So it's all free.
But listen, so briefly, you mentioned you started in your 40s. You get your black belt in your 50s. You know, this is definitely a later or a journey in the later part of your life. I'm curious, what got you started?
I got started. One of my buddies was a wrestler. His name was John. And he introduced me to the UFC. And so, gosh, this will really date me, but we went over a place called Dave's Movies and More, and we rented a VHS tape.
VHS tapes.
You guys remember those? Oh, yeah. And we watched the UFC, and then he started showing me some wrestling moves and showing me what was going on. That's really what started me. And then what I did was I bought the Gracie tapes. Remember the Horion? And I bought those tapes, and I would just start watching those. And then I start teaching them to Josh and my older son, Kyle, and we just started training like that. So that's what got us interested.
So there was no formal training. This is all at home kind of self-education.
That's where I started training. And then we moved over at about 47, 48. We moved over when Matt Hughes came into the Granite City area, opened a place called the Hit Squad.
Yep.
We started training there. Then my coach is Kyle Watson, who I just still, he's just a great guy. He's been on your show, I think, as well. And so we learned from him. He was, for me, he was the perfect fit. He was a godsend for me. He was the perfect fit for me because he just worked with me being older, and he was just really, really gracious to me. And he was the perfect guy. He always would tell me, hey, you're older, be smarter about the way you train. And I've always tried to listen to that.
So walk me through this. You in your 40s, you start doing this crazy Gracie video things, you know, by yourself. You know, there is point of curiosity. You engage into this, you know, you keep scratching your head. How the hell these little guys do all this crazy stuff? And then at some point, you get to the actual academy. And you are in your 40s at that point, right? Is there a point of concern when you're walking in there for very first time? Is there anything crosses your mind that this might not be the smartest thing in my life doing in my 40s? What is wrong with me, man? But do any of these questions pop up in your mind?
To this day, when I walk into the academy. Right? I don't know if you guys experience this. Sometimes I walk into the gym and it's still intimidating to me. it's still, you know, still, I'll still feel some levels of anxiety at times. But I think everyone, but back then, yes. Oh my gosh, it was the craziest thing. And so I didn't train at first. My wife actually took Josh to the gym and got him signed up. Mm-hmm. And so I would just take him and I would watch. And I remember asking Watson one day, I said, "Hey man, do you think it's, think I could do this?" He said, "Oh yeah, you could definitely do it." So I started trying it, and, you know, it's been quite a journey. So yeah, I still question, hey, is this the wisest thing? I recently had one of the first real injuries. I tore a bicep, that happened about 9 weeks ago. So my training's been rather limited, but it was the first major injury besides the few rib injuries that you get. But I had a distal bicep tear, which has been a rough thing to go through.
It's still pretty amazing. And that's pretty impressive. I mean, all these years on the mat, and if this is your first injury, and I mean, you know, we always try to avoid injuries, but I always tell my students, like, listen, we have to be realistic about this. This is a contact sport. There is an impact, right? Even if we bypass that part, like, we are trying to submit each other at certain situations, right? So, like, we have to be really smart about what is happening to us at the same point, what we are trying to accomplish to our partner. So that partnership, the safety is so important, but it all comes with the acknowledgement of what we are trying to do, the exchange that is taking place. Right?
Absolutely. I'm personal research. I walk in there knowing.
Yeah.
That I could get hurt. I was rolling with one of our black belt guys, and Justin Huff. He's such a good. He's a good guy. I've been training with him for years, and so we're rolling. Sometimes he'll kind of take it easy. I'm like, Huff, you know, you can go as hard as you want, man. So we're doing a hard round, and it was fun. I was loving it. Now here's the thing for me, and this is my jiu-jitsu journey. When you first start, I always tell people, listen. Here's what you need to learn first. You need to learn how to play defensively. Mm-hmm. As a white belt, you're going to get beat up. These guys are, so you're going to slowly learn this, and then you'll progress from there. Well, here's what I've learned as a 62-year-old black belt. I'm full circle. So now my physical abilities, I mean, I'm still in good shape. I can still do a lot of stuff, but I also know that, you know, you have these 25 to 35 year old young guys, younger, stronger, faster, better endurance. So now my first circle is I defend still. Mm-hmm. So I'm rolling with Huff and we're going, and we're going pretty hard. I felt just a slight pop in my bicep and, in my arm, and I didn't even know what it was. And I'm laughing because he's coming after me and I'm defending, and I'm in my mind, I'm laughing. I'm like, this is super fun and he can't get me. He can beat me in every position, but he's not killing me. And that's my, you know, to stay unsubmittable in the mm-hmm. middle of that. And so, and I can feel him and we're going hard. It was an absolute blast, but I felt a little pop. I'm like, no big deal. We'll just keep going. And then I walked away and I'm like, oh man. I think I just tore my bicep and it didn't hurt. And so I've been, you know, rehabbing that. And the first week, because I, you know, that's when I called, first thing I did was call one of my docs. I trained several physicians and I called one of my docs. I go, hey, man, I know you tore your bicep. I just tore mine. You know, do you think surgery is an option? He's like, look, at your age, you get it. He goes, but your bicep, your tendons, like old piece of leather, it just gets worn out, and it just got worn out. That's what happened. He goes, I've been able to walk through mine. So I decided not to have surgery. But the first week after that injury, I always do my own rehab stuff. I started my rehab and wanted to see if I could curl a weight at all. And I curled 5 pounds for 6 reps. That's all I can do. And then 9 weeks later, that would have been, last Thursday, I did a workout. I curled 20 pounds for 12 reps. And now my bicep's not reattached. It's partially torn, but I'm navigating this. And in my mind, I'm like, okay, I know that injuries happen. But I'm also going to recover. I am going to also get better, and I'm going to strengthen all the surrounding areas just to see if I can get my arm even stronger than it was before I got injured. So I take responsibility, but I also try to proactively think, hey, I'm moving forward with this. I'm going to figure this out. That's always my mindset. That doesn't mean I don't get discouraged in the middle of it, like, Maybe I'll never be able to grapple again or whatever, but I love to wrestle. So, and I even did a few rounds last week, and I kind of hide my arm and I'm kind of safe with it, but I did, three or four 3-minute rounds and felt really good.
Some might listen to this story and say, first of all, what is wrong with you, man? That's one. But two, they, especially if they are not training, they're just kind of engaging or thinking about it, scratching their head. This is interesting. They might ask, well, why would I do this?
Yeah.
I mean, you are telling me all these things that you just hurt yourself, and yet you doing everything to kind of get back in there. It's one, again, what is wrong with you? But two is like, why would I do this to myself? And I think that question oftentimes is raised in individuals who are over 40, even 35, even, you know, put the age aside, but when we have professional careers, when we have life, established life, we kind of coasting through it, you know, and like life is good right now. And but yet I'm looking for something else. But why would I do that? Why would I take that risk? I mean, this sounds kind of insane, right? Yeah. What is your train of thought on this? I mean, is this risky? Should people continue trying jiu-jitsu, or, you know, maybe not?
Yeah, I look at that and I think, okay, 15 years of having an absolute blast, training with my son on a regular basis, training with young guys and having fun, building these relationships, speaking into their lives, being kind of a father figure, so to speak, to them, but also just loving training. I love training. I walked out after not training for 5 or 6 weeks. I walked out. I trained just very lightly, and I walked out. Here's what I thought to myself. I thought, you could offer me $1 million right here, right now, to never train again, and I wouldn't take it.
Yeah,
I would not take it. I love to train. I love the art. I love learning. And I'm going to tell you something else. Here's my take on it. I would say, if you're thinking about training, to train, and here's why. If you want to anti-age, so to speak, now you have to train correctly. Once again, I'm not a super hard training person. I don't use a lot of strength, force, and those types of things. I've learned how not to do that. It's one of the things I teach. You know, you get hurt when the force is too great on your body. Now, there's a little background with the bicep thing that had a medical thing, and I'll explain that when I get to it. But here's my point. My point is, I believe that training jiu-jitsu keeps me young mentally. It keeps me young physically. It allows me to have self-confidence. You know, when I go somewhere, I always just think, you know, always aware of my surroundings. And I think, you know, worst case scenario, something happens. I may not win, you know, a battle if someone comes against me or tries to assault my family, my wife, whatever, but I sure have a chance. Mm-hmm. And I have a way better chance than if I would have done nothing in my life. And so I've always lifted weights. I played softball for a living. I did that for a long time. I've always been in, I've always been in athletics. And so, I think it's crazy not to train. I don't see it crazy to train. So to me, I just have a blast with it. Yeah. It's just so much fun.
Yeah. I'll tell you a quick story, kind of very, very close to what you're talking about with this crazy, you know, I don't understand people who don't train. And I often find myself in this position. And Gary and I were talking about this all the time. But like, I was having a conversation with somebody who does not train. It's one of my neighbors. And he was asking me a lot of questions. And he says, well, it sounds like this is a lot of fun. And I was like, I'll tell you what. Jiu-jitsu, in my mind, jiu-jitsu is the only activity. And I say this often. This is like one of the phrases that I use. But it's like, jiu-jitsu is the only activity where you come in with a smile on your face. You get choked. You're still smiling. Then you leave. You're still smiling. And then you're paying for it. And you don't find this anywhere else. But the trick is that unless you try it, you will never, ever understand that dynamic. And oftentimes I reflect on like the individuals who look at it, who watch it, you know, they think about it, but they never ever give themselves the opportunity to even taste it. And I wish that they overcame those obstacles and they just gave it a shot, because their life probably would be very different just from a, you know, a mental approach and just the perspective they have on life.
Absolutely. Well, you made me smile just telling that story. So I'm smiling when you're telling the story of smiling. And, you know, one of the things, too, when I teach class, and I always, when older guys come in, I always tell them, hey, just listen to me. Don't listen to the younger guys when you first start training. Just listen to me. Come to this fundamentals class, because I'm going to show you and explain, and you're probably going to have some little, you know, pulled muscles or something like that, or you're going to feel a little rough. But let me show you. If the first thing you have to understand is it's okay to lose, and it's okay to tap. Those things are perfectly okay. And once you learn to do those things, and you learn to relax a little bit when you're training, and it's so hard to do when you first start training, but it's just going to make it's, you're going to see things so differently, and you're going to be able to enjoy it. Now, if you come in with the mindset of I have to win every single round, you kind of know how that works.
Yeah.
People, they don't stay around with that.
Well, so, interesting part behind it is that either they change their mindset or unfortunately they leave. And it's, it, you know, I've witnessed that so many times all throughout the years, but it's interesting because sometimes, you know, other students come up to you and it's like, man, he's crazy. You know, he's going so hard and this and that. Like, yep, it's just one or two things will happen. Either they will adopt, or unfortunately, they won't continue, because that mindset is very hard to sustain in jiu-jitsu. You know,
so much pressure. Yeah.
Well, you said earlier, you know, you called it, I think, the mindset of defense. And I was going to ask you more about that. And you just, I think, explained how you get people there, you know, by telling them it's okay to lose, it's okay to tap, not use strength and stuff like that. But why is it so hard for us? Is it just because, and I'm talking about the older guys, the younger guys, I kind of get why it's harder for them, because they're young and that's what they do constantly. But why is it so hard for the older guys to be able to let go of that offensive mindset of the, I have to win, at all costs mindset? Because that's when I see it all the time. That's when they get hurt, you know?
No question about it. And it's because we still think in our minds we're way younger than we are, you know, so but our bodies aren't there. So I think, you know, some of it, you know, obviously it's, you know, they always say, hey, leave your ego at the door. Yeah, that's great. But the truth is we want to win. You know, we all do. You know, for me now, when I'm rolling with people, my defensive mindset is it's still there. I still play a lot of the defensive game. But trust me, I still want to be able to win the rounds and go through. I love rolling with my son. I don't win much at all, but I still love, you know, if I get a position or if I do something that makes him think, or, you know, things like that.
Do you think the concept of winning needs to change?
Well, see, this is
what we consider winning out there.
Exactly.
Is different than, what it was 25 years ago.
It's not even that, but you hitting the goldmine, I think. It's like, I think we view winning, the word winning, the phrase winning, or the action of winning very differently. One, as our life unfolds, as we get older and go through our life journey, but two, from person to person, it is very different. I think there is this preconceived idea of, in jiu-jitsu, winning comes by submission. And that's rightfully so, it sources from fighting. I mean, jiu-jitsu originated as part of fighting, as part of defending yourself. And that often was viewed as part of that. Now, we have evolved since then. And I'm curious what you think about this, but like, is submission the ultimate win here?
Not for me.
Well, that's the point, so, right? This is what we're trying to kind of emphasize, right?
Yeah, to me, survival is winning. So I celebrate every little victory. Like I'll roll with some younger blue belt who's super athletic. But I celebrate just surviving that. Or maybe I did something in the middle of that that no one else notices. To me, I love it. I'm like, oh, I know what I just did there. I know I'm walking away from this. I'm not completely gassed. My muscles still feel good. So yes, I agree with you. And I think that the concept and the redefinition of that is important, because it is harder to, when you're, and the goal is for these young guys that you're training, to be better and to get better. And sometimes they'll get better, better than you. And it's kind of neat. Yeah. You want that, but at the same time, there's still that competitive edge that we have in us, which is good. We want to have that. Mm-hmm. But we don't want to have it at the expense of, I have to win so much that I hurt my own body, or it makes me miserable if I lose, or, those types of things. For me, I'm super happy just to be on the mats.
A moment ago, or just a bit ago, you mentioned the match of Hiron Gracie and Andre Galvao. And one of the most phenomenal matches. I mean, like, if you guys haven't seen this, you need to watch this. I think it's on YouTube. I don't know. It is from a winning perspective. If you really analyze that match, it is so clear the objectives behind each player was complete opposite. One is playing the domination game. One is all about control, destroy, submit. And the other one, it doesn't even care. It's all about defense, escape, manipulation from the weak points, from finding loopholes, finding small spaces, and so on. I always found that match as a very fascinating, whether right or wrong. I love both of the guys. But the point is that black and white scenario that takes place during that match is really what you are talking about right now. The quote unquote point of winning comes at very different points for each of them. And, who are we to determine who's better or not if the goal is different, right? It's very different than a running race when there is a finish line and we time and we know who's a clear winner. In jiu-jitsu, that's by far more challenging if the goals are different, right? There's a moving target constantly for everybody has their own. It's different than your partner.
100%. And that match, honestly, I probably was a purple belt when I watched that match. And I actually, that's one of the things that was a tipping point for me. I'm like, oh, I want to be that good defensively. Mm-hmm. To where I could just chill, relax, not breathing hard. And that's when I started making my transition to that type of training. And then Josh and I were able to do a seminar with Hiron, which was super fun. And I learned a lot from that as well. And his whole chill philosophy and mm-hmm. how he approaches it. And he's still phenomenal.
Yeah,
in the middle of that. And so that helped me a lot.
Yeah, we've had him on the show here just a few months back. I don't even know when it was. It was a while back. But anyhow, it's what a phenomenal mind just to pick his brain and talk jiu-jitsu. I mean, it's, sometimes it's just almost overwhelming to have such a great mind to connect with.
Absolutely.
Let's pivot this a little bit.
Okay.
We had Josh here on the show a few weeks ago, some time ago. And I'm actually curious. This is fascinating to me because I'm a father. Gary's a father. We have kids. My one of my boys trains jiu-jitsu. The other one is going to. It's kind of embedded into their path.
Yeah.
Whether they like it or not, it's there. And I'm not the one to force the kids to do things, but it is part of my life. It is what it is, and they are kind of there, part of it. How old is Unfolded for you and Josh? I know he started first. Is that correct?
He started first. Yes.
He started first. You're the one watching
him.
In a formal way. Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
And you're watching him. He's a young man at that point. And he's growing into it and he's going through his journey from competition to all the other projects that he does, crazy busy. But you're sitting on the sidelines. How is this unfolding in your mind? I mean, there has to be a point of pride that's associated with this, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. He's a good young man. He is. I'm really proud of him for sure. And we're very, very good friends, business partners. We talk daily. I just think back when you were saying that, I was just thinking back. I remember those first times of him being on the mat and I'm watching him and, you know, I don't know if you've ever seen the, when your kids are rolling, you're twisting and turning with them and you're kind of into it. I didn't even know what I was twisting and turning about. But here's another thing too, and I'll just kind of lead up to this, but, so I started training and there was this point, I remember this, you know, we would just roll together and we would just train together. There's this point, he's like 13, 14 years old. I don't know, maybe 15, but we're in the living room. We're going through some moves and it starts escalating. And then it's a full out war in our living room we have a big screen TV and I'm like, we almost knocked the TV down. But honestly, that was the day I'm like, oh man, he's very good at this. And so I knew right then, I'm like, oh, I'm in trouble. He's gotten better and he's so young. And so it was really cool to see that. And then one more quick, I was coaching him, one more quick thing when I knew he was good at jiu-jitsu. We're watching, maybe a white belt. I don't remember exactly what belt, but we're watching a match and we're sitting in the sidelines and he's going to get into the finals. And this guy, there's two guys, we're watching the match and they're going to get in, you know, the winner fights Josh in the final. And he looked and he goes, I'm going to inverted triangle that guy. Did you see that? And I didn't see it. I didn't know what he was talking about. But he had seen something that I didn't see. And then he went out and finished with the inverted triangle. He had seen that pattern. And I'm like, well, that's really cool to have that gift. And so, so it was really neat to watch him grow and to be a part of that. And then with where he's at now and what he's doing now, it's really fun. It's just fun to see. And I was just talking to my wife about it. He was working on his studio all day yesterday while I was training clients. And I actually trained him and some other jiu-jitsu guys yesterday. But I just told her, I go, you know, he works really hard. He's very diligent at what he does. And it's kind of, you're kind of seeing some of the success he's having from that hard work. We instilled that. You know, that's what I've done my whole life is, just kind of, you know, when you run your own business, you got to figure it out. You got to make it work. You got to come up with the ideas to make it happen. And so I wanted to give him that opportunity. He used to train with you guys familiar with Jonathan Thomas, John mm-hmm. Thomas.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. And I did personal training with John for years. For a couple of years, he would come in and then I would train him and then he would go next door. And he and Josh they would just drill and go through stuff. And that was a big part of Josh's journey. And I remember, we were on our back porch and we were talking and John was talking about going to work and these guys at work, would make fun of him because he trained this jiu-jitsu and he wanted to move away and he wanted to make this his life and they would make fun of him. And he would say, man, I'd look at those guys and they're miserable at 50 years old. He goes, they're miserable. They hate their jobs. They hate where they're at. And yet they're making fun of me, wanting to go do something different. And so when Josh and I talked about that, I told him, I go, look, I'll give you the option. You're welcome to go to college if you want. Or you're welcome to pursue your journey. I will support you in either thing you want to do. I said, but, you know, once you make the decision, you go with it. And he's like, yeah, I want to do this jiu-jitsu thing. And so that's kind of I've always supported that for him, given him that option to be successful or to fail. And I walk through with him. And so where he's at now is really cool to be a part of that is really awesome. And to see where he's going. And so, you know, we work on our business daily. We just kind of continue to try to grow both of us. I'm still growing at my age in certain things in my business as well.
When all of this is happening over the last couple of decades and you watch him grow and you know, evolve with all of these projects and even jiu-jitsu itself. Do you ever think about it in a sense of this is going to be something in the future? Like, this has so much potential, and almost I have to step back and let him do him in order for this to really turn out to what it needs to be.
100%. Yeah. And I do that. I really do. We were having a conversation yesterday, you know, and he said, "Hey, did you see Mark Zuckerberg is doing jiu-jitsu?" I'm like, "Yeah." He goes, I just want to keep working and building my podcast. He said, in 3 years, this jiu-jitsu thing is going to be huge. And he said, it's just going to continue to grow. So he's got this vision of what he wants to do. And so I'm like, yeah, I get it. And so, and I look at it and I want to support him in the middle of it, but he is his own man. So I've always allowed him to grow and to learn. And if I can help, I always try to help. But yeah, I do. I let him go on his own and learn. And he's got such good people. Watson's still a big part of his life. And, you know, Watson's such a good dude. And he's got a lot of good people around him. And so we have a good network of people to see the growth and see what's happening. So yeah, absolutely.
Is there one story that sticks out in your mind in regards to you two where you were like, oh man, or maybe something just mind-blowing that took place, a big pivot point during that entire relationship over decades as you guys are partners and training together, you know, all of this continues unfolding?
You know, the living room story was the best one, you know, anyway, that was just an incredible, I still remember that one, you know, and maybe the last time I submitted him was a pretty good story.
Let's hear this.
We should get Josh on this so he can listen.
Call him up.
Mahler. We talk about that. So there was a point where we're rolling and oh man, his foot was dangling and I hit him with a toe hold. And so it's been a couple of years, but yeah, we still remember that one. But you know, no significant stories. You know, I think the thing that he and I have walked through together. He's very good at a white belt, and he walks into the blue belt and he loses a little bit in the beginning of the blue belt. And we were like, oh my gosh, what's going on here? Well, then he figures it out and he starts winning at blue belt. Then he gets this purple belt. And he loses at purple belt. And we go through the same thing. So the point is we've been through every belt like that. His beginning black belt journey was the same way, but we've always been able to say, hey, it's okay to lose. And I always tell him, hey, listen, if he gets discouraged, I'm like, I know you're going to figure this out. I know that you're going to, you know, figure out how to compete at this level. The problem is most people can't live with the losing.
Yeah.
And so they stop competing or something happens. It's hard. It's hard. Competition is stressful. I remember we were driving to Watson's one day and I just competed and, in Boca Raton and I got second and I was a purple belt and I was telling Josh, I'm like, man, I don't know if you guys have ever felt like this, but I've never felt like I've fit the belt that I got. I always had to grow into that belt. I never felt like I was never a guy that says, oh man, I deserve my purple belt. I'm so good. I've never been like that. I'm like, I wanted to just stay a blue belt because I was, you know, I just didn't feel good at that. And I remember we were driving across the Poplar Street Bridge going into Missouri. And I was telling Josh, I said, man, I finally feel like I'm a legit purple belt. And he gave me this really weird look. And so, and then we drove over and then I got my brown belt and I'm like, oh no, the pressure
starts all over.
The pressure is back on. So
you bring up a really good point. And Gary and I, we talked about this. Like I was even sharing my stories or, you know, from each of those anchor points of milestones. You know, I think blue belt for me was the only one that I like really wanted. It was like that candy, that cookie that you want to really grab onto. But the moment that happened, I never felt that I earned the belt that I got. I always felt chasing it. And the moment it happened, I felt I had to do more work because now the responsibility is on me. Now I have to step up, you know, and like I always felt that way. Matter of fact, like it, especially in the later belts, I felt that I didn't deserve them almost. Like I trusted my instructors, but yet I felt like that. Why couldn't we wait? Like, why couldn't we wait 6 more months? Like, it would be cool, you know, like I just, you know, chill back. Why do we have to do this now? You know, and I think a lot of students feel that way. And that's part of that trusting the instructors, trusting that belt is not only a recognition, but oftentimes is a motivator to take this to the next level. Take it, step up. Now you got to work. Now you got to prove yourself. Not everybody else. Prove yourself. Prove to you that you are where you are. And part of this is really that's kind of a beautiful part, in my opinion, you know?
Absolutely. I always used to think, is Watson giving me my belt because I'm so old and he thinks I'm going to die before I get my black belt? Is that why he's rushing this process? But what you said is 100% true. Grow into it.
Yeah.
You know, and it has been helpful for me because when it comes to promotion time, Josh and I'll talk about that. I let him make all those decisions. I run the personal training side. He runs the jiu-jitsu side. I'm always there to help if he needs me. But we'll talk about, hey, what do you think about this person? And I'm like, oh, he's not ready, but let's give him his belt. He's close and he will grow into it. So for me, it's kind of been a benefit in that respect, in that I'm like, oh yeah, that makes sense. And so if I hadn't had that experience, then I wouldn't have been able to share that experience with other people.
Yeah, and that's one of those beautiful things in jiu-jitsu. Speaking of the belts, you got your black belt that's 57. Is that, am I right?
Yeah.
57. How did that feel?
I was weird, right? Because I was like the first.
Did you know what's coming?
No, I didn't.
Completely surprised. Yeah, Walk me through the day. That's always a fascinating story for everybody. Walk me through the day.
So we go to a camp. They have a big camp each year, right? And honestly, I was not even considering it. It wasn't even on my radar. I had no idea. And then at these camps, they do a belt promotion. And all of a sudden, Watson says, hey, I'm going to give Steve his black belt today. I honestly was speechless. You know, you like the back black belt speech. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't have one. It was the weirdest. It was really, really an odd feeling for me. I honestly, and I'm sure you might experience this as well, but as Watson is talking and tying it on me, his voice, it was shaking a bit. He said he was fighting back tears. I know I was fighting back tears. Mm-hmm. So it was so really just weird. It was a surreal moment for me. It was super, it was such a great honor, you know, to be, you know, recognized in that way. That's basically, you know, it just happened unexpectedly. And, but man, you know, you go through that and you start, I know for me, it was a flood of memories of back to that first day at the HIIT squad. And then here I am 15 or so years later, getting a black belt. And, you know, when I started jiu-jitsu, I was just hoping to be able to get a blue belt. You know, that was kind of like my ultimate goal. And so, and then I get my black belt and it was a very interesting, once again, because I never chased belts. It was just something I didn't do. And so I still, you know, hold that over Josh's head too, that I was a black belt before he was.
Of course.
He did mention this. He did mention it on the show. And this is why I'm bringing it up. We want to clarify the air. But listen, the moment you got the black belt, right? all the knowledge just got downloaded to your head, right? You became an expert of everything. You know all of the jiu-jitsu, right? Because that's the perception that everybody has.
Oh my gosh. You know what? Honestly, for me, that was, I changed my game even more at black belt because of my age. And then I was like, how can I continue to learn and get better and kind of fall into this belt? You know, I ran across, we all have that online stuff. I really, really, really enjoy Henry Akins. I don't know if you guys.
Oh, yeah. Him. We had him on the show. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. We love Henry.
I do too. And he's helped me so much, just his material, because it is that fundamental jiu-jitsu stuff. Yeah. And so he and his teaching style is very good for me because he teaches in short segments and that I can grasp.
Yeah.
And so, that was a big part of changing my game at black belt, is just learn. And I teach a lot of those concepts. Watson uses a lot of those concepts, as does Josh. They just, I don't know if you have guys ever run across this, but you'll learn something and someone will have a name for it. And then you'll go, oh, like pressure passing. Watson's done that for years. Weight distribution, he's done that for years. They just didn't have a name for it. Josh does the same stuff. Yeah. You know, they make me carry their weight. And I'm like, now I have a name for it. So those concepts become real to me because I've experienced those.
Yeah.
So at black belt, it's like you're super intimidated. And I see a lot of black belts to this day. Who struggle. They don't know a lot, and they want to try to hide that. And the fact is not like, yeah, we're just black belts. There are things I'm still learning. There's things that I'm still not a black belt at, if that makes sense. There are certain positions like, oh, I'm not a black belt at that position. Maybe I'm a black belt at this position, but I'm not a black belt at back control or whatever that case may be.
And I think that's one of the biggest characteristics behind a true leader, is the fact of simply admitting, I don't know everything. However, I can help you get there. I can help you figure out how to get that answer, right? The moment we start claiming that we are the source of truth, or we have the full knowledge and we are unbreakable, unbeatable, I think that's where oftentimes a lot of people start questioning, is that true? So that point of vulnerability, absolutely, I think oftentimes comes after that black belt word, after that black belt milestone, and we really start thinking about this in a slightly different way. So even though not a lot of changes, yet a lot of dust change. And it's that very big pivot point in the jiu-jitsu journey for many, many.
Oh, no, I still, I'll be teaching a class or something and we'll kind of explore the move that I'm teaching and I'll see a blue belt do something. I'm like, oh, show me what you just did there.
Yep.
That looks really good. Yep. Let's learn. Then I'll even try to point that out. Hey, here's what this guy just did here. And so, so it's really interesting. Part of my journey, I have a buddy, I just talked to him on the phone. His name's Derek. He's a black belt. But when I first started, he was my training partner. He was younger, stronger, faster, bigger, and better than me. So my first year and a half or two of jiu-jitsu was on bottom side control, which I am definitely a black belt at bottom side control.
Not by choice.
Yeah. No, but I learned. And I can survive that position. And I've learned so much from that. Yeah. And I remember talking to Watson. I'm like, my Kyle, I'm just getting murdered here. And so he would give me some ideas. And one day he looked at me, he goes, hey, man, you're going to have to figure this out. So I went online and started searching some things. And I came across Eduardo Talis, and the Turtle Master. Mm-hmm. And so he was talking about his journey at purple belt. He's getting beat by his instructor today, I think it was, who his instructor was. Mm-hmm. And he said, and all of a sudden he went and turned, rolled away and went into turtle. And he started figuring things out. So I went back and, training with Derek that night, and same thing over and over and over again, except I rolled away and I went to turtle, and the game changed right then and there. And I'm like going, oh man, I just learned jiu-jitsu on my own. And it was, I still remember that. And I still use that position to this day. That's part of my defensive game. We had a guy come into, and this guy's a good guy. His name is Chris Paynes. Are you familiar with Chris Paynes at all?
No.
Okay. So he's defensive jiu-jitsu guy under Priyat Nicholson, I think the guy's name is. He's a black belt under Priyat. Well, Chris comes in, just really, really connect to him well, and he does seminars around. And so he will come in, and here's the thing about how Josh does seminars. He will call someone and say, "Hey, Dad, I called John Thomas. He's staying with you for 3 days." so Chris comes in, and now when Chris comes now, he's been here several times. He's got a room downstairs. So coming in, he'll send pictures back home, and he'll say, "Hey, I'm back home now. I got my room here." But anyway, he teaches defensive jiu-jitsu. And so I was doing defensive jiu-jitsu. I just didn't know that I was doing it, in a sense of the way that he put it. So he comes back in and he's playing that turtle game, and he's playing the running man. He's playing all these games. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is gold for me. Yeah. And so, you know, once again, it's just built into my game now. And I've learned so much over the years just from that kind of a game.
It's fascinating how we can learn little things by watching others or completely by accident, yes, turning in a direction, and then a next level opens up. It is, you know, it really puts a thought in my mind that sometimes the progress, that next step, the next milestone could be 100% coincidental. And if we ignore those opportunities, we'll never discover them.
Yeah. You know? We learn by accident. We learn by accident sometimes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
How do you help people find their game, so to speak? Because I think, you know, we were talking about being distracted or being influenced by so much that people are always searching for things. And I think they end things too early. They don't give positions a chance and they're quick to move on. Is there a way to help people with that?
That's so, you're so right on there. Yep. So Saturday, I'm doing some roles. We have Josh's guy that does his video stuff. His name's Bryce. Josh is always making fun of Bryce.
We love Bryce. We've never met him, but we love him because of how mean Josh is.
we heard a lot of stories.
Such a good guy. So I'm rolling with Bryce. And what I teach from guard is if you can avoid playing guard, do it. I like to come up and be on top. So I show that a lot. And so I'm rolling with Bryce. And Bryce is, he goes to a turtle position. I stay heavy on him. And then he turns and falls back in the guard. And so I just stopped right there. I go, "Hey, Bryce, listen, right there was when you could have came up and played turtle and taken me down from that position." Yep. So your game is always to fall back. Let's add this to your game. So what I do in that situation is I just try to add little bits and pieces to a person's game who already has a particular game. So that's how I do it on one level. But on another level, in the fundamentals class and then teaching beginners, I begin to build their game off of my game. And then I allow them to branch out from there because they don't even know what a game is. I remember how I learned this was BJJ over 40, Stephen Whittier. He's a friend of mine. And I was watching a video and he said, "The goal, if you're on bottom, is to sweep, pass, and submit. And the goal, if you're on top, is to pass and submit." And so I built my game off of that simple concept there. And so so I teach that to people to this day and then let them branch out and build a game from there. Like this week, this Wednesday, I'll be teaching a class and I'm showing some guard passing stuff. And I'm going to show people, you know, how to use weight distribution, how to use angles, how to use those things in their guard passing. And I'll just show them my game off of that. And then I'll explain how you get there. From positions. So that's kind of how I do it. But I always try to put it in a framework and in a concept of this connects to this, this connects to this. And eventually their mind will a light bulb will kind of, you know, go off in their mind.
Many refer to this as building Legos or connecting dots. I use those frames, you know, those phrases all the time, but it's really all about, you have these little pieces all over in an organized chaos, if you will. And it's really up to the student to figure out how to create these relationships between them, right? And this is where we create a system, what many call a system or a game, your game, right? Yeah. And this is where, you know, the power of jiu-jitsu truly comes in. And this is really where we can stimulate ourselves to the next level. I mean, this is the chess game.
Oh, I love it. Absolutely love it. Yeah.
Steve, before we start wrapping this up, what we do at the end of every episode, and you didn't know about this, and this is actually going to be really funny because our previous guest asked a question. He had no clue who will be answering that question. So he asked a question completely in blind. And Gary and I, we were chuckling here because you made a comment earlier in the episode about this. So Gary's going to ask you this question. I think this is going to be funny, but we'll let you answer the question from a previous guest that we had.
Yeah, you answered this question at about the 10-minute mark of today's podcast. And Victor Doria wants to know, can you Barambolo?
I actually can. I can.
In that case, we're going to ask you to show right on the air right now. I'm just kidding.
My bookcase is in the way. I can Barambolo. I don't do it. It scares me. I can invert. I can do all those things. And I do play a little of the inversion game off a lasso. I like a lasso guard, so I play a little bit of that. But yes, I can Barambolo, but I'm just not very good at it.
There you go.
And so I kind of stay away from it. But that's a great question.
Yeah, we were laughing at the moment we were talking about it in the beginning of the show. But I was like, yeah, well, there it is. There it is. Steve, you know, a lot of good information. We appreciate sharing your story. I mean, there's so much gold in there, in that that's this last hour or so, as you're sharing your journey, your story, your wisdom, and all your experiences. If anybody wants to connect with you, are you available online? Are you on social media? How can anybody reach out to you?
Yeah, email steve@fitnessandmore.net, Facebook, Steve McKinney. I'm old, so I don't do much Instagram. I'm on there, Fitness and More STL, because I do a lot of personal training. I do train jiu-jitsu athletes. I have a super unique way to train athletes. It's different than everyone else's. And then fitnessandmore.net is my site. And then I have an online site, fitnessandmore.net/online. And so that's where I do live videos on training and things like that, on personal training there and nutrition and things like that.
So you know, it was a good episode when we didn't get to all the topics, and one of which was the fitness and jiu-jitsu. But that just gives us a reason to bring you back at some point and continue that conversation. But you know, it is going to be interesting to watching you and Josh continue growing what you do best and continue contributing to specifically to the fitness and jiu-jitsu communities as you making an impact in what you do the best. So we appreciate you being here. Thank you for hanging out with us, Gary.
Yeah, thanks for dropping a ton of knowledge for people, especially the older guys. If they give this a listen and open up their minds a little bit, they're gonna gain a lot. So I appreciate that. Thank you.
I love it.
My pleasure. Thank you guys for having me.
Thank you for listening to Raw Radio. If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to leave us a review and help us make the show even more amazing. For future episodes, check out our website and follow us on all major podcast platforms. Take care.